Mrs. Harlow is real too.
You have to keep your mind healthy as much as possible, because after all, it is the only way to survive, the only way to win something. If not, it is their victory. They have got you physically and mentally and in every way. So it's a complete victory as far as they are concerned. You are left with nothing. So you have to find a way.
In the autobiography by Tickell, mm-hmm. he emphasizes how in Frayne prison you had this attitude of defiance.
Yes.
Why did you adopt such an attitude?
Because I discovered that, I don't know what the Germans are like today, but in those days, I called them a ras de valet. I think if you treated them in a certain way, as if they were almost your servants, they had a type of respect for you. If you didn't go under, they had a kind of respect.
So you thought...
So therefore, the only attitude to have is to dismiss them. To almost say, well, I'm here, but what does it matter? You know, you don't exist.
Do you think that if you hadn't been defiant, it would have been worse for you?
I suppose not. But it would have been worse for me, insofar that I would not have kept a certain attitude, a certain personality, if I can call it that. Even the word is too strong, but identity would be better. I kept my own identity.
Did you see women in Frayne who were not defiant?
You see, I never saw anybody because I was always in solitary. With written on my door, grand criminel, pas de privilège.
What was the address in...
See, I was condemned to death, officially.
Tickell, in fact, says in his book that you were sentenced to death for being a French woman.
And an English woman, which, of course, took away the drama of the situation at the time, because when this sentence was read to me in New Forge, they said, well, you are condemned to death twice, once for France and once for England. And what could pass in my mind was, for which country will I die? I shall never know. It happened just like that. It was quite ridiculous. But then a lot of ridiculous things happened all through my captivity. And they saved me. They really did, those ridiculous moments. Because in every tragedy, there is an element of comedy, if you can see it. And the comedy helps you to survive the tragedy. And it did with me all the time, right up to the very end.
Can you give an example?
Yes, even the end of my silly war. The fact that the commandant of Ravensbrück, with all his authority and his years of dedication to Hitler and a man, you know, of great importance, who had seen dying over 100,000 women, not batting an eyelid and all that, chose to save me by taking me out of my cell and carting me away, traveling all day long and all that, saying that he was taking me at the end of the day. When he said to me, do you want to know where we are going? I said, no. I honestly believe that, like so many other people, he would take me to some wood and I would be sort of killed there, therefore not leaving any sort of traces. And I said, no. So he said, well, I'm taking you to the Americans. I said, you are? Huh? You must be mad. And it is true. At about after 10 o'clock, between 10 and 11 at night, we were stopped by some Americans, American army. And he said, this is Frau Churchill. She has been my prisoner. And I said, this is the commandant of Ravensbrück. You make him a prisoner. So they took his gun, they broke it, and gave it to me. And I was left with his wonderful white Mercedes, lying in red leather. And they said, well, we are going to find you a room for the night. And I said, no, if you don't mind, I have not seen the sky for a very long time. And the stars, I would like to sit in this car until the morning. And I had two reasons for doing that reason, and the other reason was that I knew he had a lot of documents in the car. And I wanted to have a look at those documents in order to bring them back to this country. And I did. I brought them back here.
Why do you think that he did that, that he took you?
Because Winston Churchill had been wonderful. And that kept up the story that Peter Churchill was related to him. Now, I had said, to save Peter Churchill's skin, that I was his wife, which of course I wasn't. I'd never met him before. But they accepted that. They thought, well, it's a possibility, of course. And I said to them when we were in Cap 2, I said, you see, you would never have done this job but for me. You know, I am a French woman. I influenced him in coming back to France to do this job and all that. So they accepted that. They really did accept the fact that it was very much a possibility that it was I was the guilty one. And so Winston Churchill never said, well, it isn't true. And I thanked him after the war. And his answer was wonderful. He said, Madam, this is indeed an honor. Wonderful. But, no. So it was lucky.
So the chief of Ravensbrück
thought he was taking somebody of importance who could help him, perhaps to a better future. I don't know what he expected. I don't know what he expected.
So do you think that you owe your survival to the fact that you were able to use the name Churchill?
Certainly. There is no other reason why I should have survived, because I was condemned to death. And after all, I am the only one of all the girls who did the same job who was really condemned to death. And they haven't come back. I came back. So how can one explain this? Furthermore, they had every right, if you like, to carry out the sentence. They should have done it.
In Frayne prison, I think that you sent a message to an address via this lady called Michelle.
Yes, who was a communist, by the way, wonderful girl.
What was that address that you sent the message to?
I gave her the address of my mother.
And did the message get through?
No. Because I don't know exactly what happened to her after that. We managed to... See, I never saw her, because I never saw anybody. The message was given to her in the wall of the cells, just a really little square like that. And when the prison was a normal prison, if you like, it used to be slightly warmer than it was in my days. In fact, it was very cold, because there was no heating whatsoever. But it used to be built with a possibility of warming up something between the walls. So you could sometimes communicate with the cell above yours and the one under through that opening in the wall. And that's the way I contacted Michelle.
Did she do a lot for your morale with being in contact with her?
Well, she was young, I was young. I could not say to her why I was there. I knew why she was, because it was easy for her to tell me why she was there. Yes, I mean, you know, when you are in those circumstances, it is good to have somebody else you can talk with. You're not brave all day long and every day. And for example, when I used to be brought back from the Avenue Foch, she used to know that I had been fetched. She could hear that. She would hear them bringing me back in my cell. When everything was quiet, she would say, are you all right? And I would say, yes, sir, it's all right this time. You know, that kind of thing. Yes, it is a comfort, of course, to know that there is another human being who knows something, the fact that you exist.
Were you able to learn about her background?
No.
Some facts
not,
about her?
Not very much, because, you know, one used to be very careful. You didn't ask a lot of questions. You didn't want to answer questions yourself. And you had to accept the fact that everybody, more or less, was in the same position. You couldn't endanger other people by talking about... I mean, I never would have said to anybody at all that I had been in England. Nobody knew I had ever been in England. For 3 years, I lived with the fact that nobody knew I had been in England, ever. You know, you have to You have to do that kind of thing.
This man called Bleicher.
Yes, Ari.
I think he invited you to spend the day out with him.
Well, you know, for 6 months, he used to come and have me taken out of my cell and taken to an interrogation room in Fresnes. And he would talk, say, I went to a beautiful concert last night, Lise. I thought of you. You would have loved it. And he said, that's always very kind of you. He was clever. He used to try to break you down that way. And so I used to listen to what he had to say. And then one day he came and he said, I've decided tomorrow I'm coming to fetch you very early in the morning. I'll take you to Paris for the day. Bring you back at night about 10 o'clock. You can have a bath, you can have a good meal, you can, you know, wash your hair. And I said, Henri, if you ever do a thing like that, I'm going to scream so loudly that everybody will know I'm taken out of this place by force. I will not go to Paris with you, not friends or anything. I will have no contact with anybody. And you cannot take me away without people knowing that you are doing it to share brute force. I will not go. And
so
I didn't.
So you thought that it was a trick, really?
No. And simply that I wasn't going to give anything whatsoever. I wasn't going to... No, I don't suppose I would have lost anything. The proof of it is that he did the same thing for Peter, for Raoul. Raoul did spend a day with some friends of his in Paris, with him there, Bleicher, of course, had a bath, had a good meal, played some records or whatever, came back with a parcel of food. Nothing happened out of that. But you see, I wasn't going to have any kind of compromise with them. I wasn't going to accept anything, not a drop of water or a crust of bread. Nothing. So, that was the only way.
But did you hate the Germans at that time?
No. No, they were in their situation, I was in mine. I was their prisoners, they were the masters of the situation. If you accept to do that kind of job, call yourself an agent of some kind or something, you accept what goes with it. It's no good all at once because you are caught to think, you know, they are wrong and you are right.
But some people would have compromised, wouldn't they?
Well, people do what they can, I suppose. Or what they feel is right or wrong, I don't know. I don't know, it is difficult, you see, until you are in those circumstances. Are you to judge and know what's right, what's wrong, what is weak, what is strong? You see, I get very upset when people have said, and still say to this day, that so-and-so was weak because he gave away this and that or somebody else. And I say, well, how do you know that he was weak? Put yourself in his shoes. Would you have been stronger? Do you know that? Because I claim that it is impossible to know it. It is impossible for both of us just now to know what we would do. Even with what I know, I still don't know. And you not having, thank God, gone through all that, you don't know. You can't. And on top of that, I was a free agent, if you like, insofar that I knew that if they were going to torture me, they were going to torture me only. Not a member of my family, not a loved one. So, you know, you can be stronger, but if they say to you, look, you don't talk, we are going to do this to your wife or your husband or your mother, then, you know, faced with a decision like that, who knows? It's easy to blame.
So what was the worst thing for you in captivity, would you say? Separation from your children?
Yes, that was the only thing. The only thing. But you know, again, it is people have said very kindly over the years that I was brave or courageous or this or that. But you see, nobody realized that what happened to me in the field they really didn't matter in a way, because I really can truly say that I know what it is to have a broken heart. Because I lived in England with a broken heart. So nothing after that could break it ever again. So the rest was physical. That is, was the only thing that demanded courage. And I would never do it again.
I interviewed a British airman some years ago,
yes,
who was shot down,
mm,
and captured and eventually taken to Frayne prison.
Yes.
And he said that he was confronted by a woman in Frayne prison,
mm,
and the woman was asked, she was a prisoner, who was asked if she recognized him.
Yes.
And he said he thought it was you. Do you remember such an incident?
No. I don't know. No. But you see, I wasn't the only one he could have met. It could have been one of the other girls, of course. Because, I mean, I wasn't the only one.
There was an SS guard in the prison called Truda.
Yes.
About whom Tickell, mm, writes.
Mm.
And he, yes, says you managed to gain control of her.
Well, you see, she spoke French very well, because she had been a governess in a Belgian family for many years before the war. So her French was quite good. And I think she was fascinated by the fact that my name was Churchill. In fact, it is correct, it is true to say that, because after the war, I received a letter from her. She had spent some years in prison, and she wrote to me saying that when she was free, she would very much like to come and work for me. So, you know, it's a strange thing, but it's true. You know, it just shows you, you know, what strange minds some people have got. After having been your jailer, to want to come and work for you in appreciation of the, or I don't know what, it's quite fun.
So again, the name Churchill was of some importance.
Oh yes, of course it was impressive. So impressive that I did the rest of my captivity in Ravensbrück under another name. They put me, was registered under the name of Shure, and not Churchill. They didn't want the personnel of the prison to know who I was really.
How do you spell it?
Shure, I don't know how to spell it. It's a German name, which I never saw in writing, of course.
When you travelled to Germany, you travelled with six other women from the French section.
Yes.
What condition were they in?
Not bad. At that time, not bad.
Were they able to tell you anything?
Well,
about
I wasn't with the six of them. You know, we travel in two separate compartments. Yes, of course, we exchange all our little bit of news and information. Yes, some of us were a little more depressed than others, or not so depressed. Or we tried to give each other a little courage, because after all, we didn't know where we were going to, and we had a good idea what for. We try not to think too much about that. They were all very brave.
Can you remember any details of what they told you?
Well, we all exchanged our views on the Avenue Foch, of course, more than anything, because that was a setup we knew above all. We had the same people dealing with us. Yes, we talked about the people from the office here, because after all, we knew them all, Backmaster and everybody. We talked of what we all knew of. We tried to talk of what we would do one day when the war was over. We didn't talk too much about that, but we did try. We tried to keep our spirit up by exchanging our hopes, or consoling, if necessary, each other a bit. We did what women do when they are together in difficult circumstances. But I must say they were very brave. Very brave. Young women. Pretty young women. I will never forget them, ever.
Can you remember what they said about the office?
Well, you see, some of them weren't sure about certain people. Some, one or two, looked for an answer to some questions. They had a time to think that this had happened because of something else. Where was the source? You know, I suppose when you are like that, you search endlessly why it happened. You see, in my case, I didn't have to search, I knew why. But some of them were not absolutely sure of the reason that was given to them. I'll put it that way.
So were they wondering if there was a traitor in London?
I suppose they did. I suppose it is a thought that could have come into one or two minds, yes. But then, after all, it is in that game, I suppose, it is a thought that is always a possibility.
Did you think there was any foundation for such a speculation?
Yes.
When you first entered Ravensbrück,
yes.
Did you realize that it was something extraordinary?
Well, obviously, by the appalling size of it, the appalling number of women there who were no longer looking like human beings, but more like wounded animals. But the sheer misery of it all, in such a size. Yes, I spent the first night in the shower room of the camp, on the concrete floor there, because I think they were not organized to receive me in the prison, in the bunker, because I never was in the camp, ever. And I never was with people, you see. I was always in solitary. The only time I was with people was traveling from one prison to another. And so I didn't know what to expect in the morning. I knew they were going to throw me in the camp with the other women. Or I wasn't sure. Didn't even know anything about the prison inside the camp, of course. Then in the morning I was taken to what we call the bunker, to the prison. And there I started, you know. I was taken and put in an underground cell there with the window completely blocked, bricked. Completely bricked off, with just holes so that I could get some air, but well, I could not see through. And there I was. That was that.
Did you quickly discover that people were being killed there, were being exterminated?
No, you could hear everything. You could hear everybody screaming, you could hear you could hear everything. And every evening it was, of course, I mean, it was another punishment, if you like. They put me in the cell next to the punishment cell. So every evening there used to be a defile of women coming to that cell to be beaten. I could count every stroke. I could hear everyone. I could hear the screams. Yes, you do know what's going on. And then when I was moved, a few months after, to the end of the war, really, when they decided that they were not doing so well, they moved me to a ground floor cell on the other side of the bunker, and I was by the crematorium. So I could hear what was going on in the crematorium. In fact, I used to have the top of my window, because I was ill then, very ill, They opened the top of my window that much. I could not see through it, but, you know, air used to come. Well, the air was made of the cinders of the crematorium. My cell was covered in cinders from the crematorium, pieces of hair, burning hair, and, and the smell of it all. Yes, I know it all. Absolutely.
So you saw the women being driven to the crematorium, did you?
I didn't see them. I heard it. All my experiences were sounds. The only time I saw the most dreadful thing was when I was leaving Ravensbrück. Then I saw dreadful things.
What did you see?
The most dreadful things that human beings can do to other human beings. And there's no limit to that. None at all. I think animals do it to each other, probably, in certain circumstances. And you have to understand it. But it's a sad, very sad spectacle. Very.
Can you say specifically what you saw?
Yes. Not that I wish to remember it. But of course I can never forget it, so... One example I can give you. I was left for a moment in the camp like that before I was taken out of of all that to be put in the commandant's car. And I saw a girl of about 18, I suppose, 19, who certainly had not been there long because she was still fresh. She had, her head was shaved, but she was still fresh looking and the next minute, she was dead at my feet. They shot her down, and the woman around her attacked her. Like dogs. Still warm. You know, they were starving, they were demented, they were crazy. Well, you know that the situation exists even in today. Like a plane crashes in the middle of nowhere and people have to survive. Well, the only way they can survive is whichever way they can find. So one can't be surprised.
Why was she shot?
Don't know. Nobody ever knows. Perhaps because she was talking to me. How do I know? She will never know. I will never know.
When you were taken out of Ravensbrück, you were taken to more than one other camp, I think.
Yes. I was taken to two more, where I spent a very short time on our way to where Zoran wanted to go, to the American. And in fact, in the last camp, he came about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. He said to me, Hitler is dead. And I said, oh? He said, yes, he died as a hero. And I said, are you going to do the same thing? I thought, well, I'm dead anyway, too, so why can't I say what I think? So I asked him that question, and I thought, well, you've had it or that. And to my great surprise, no. We started back into his car to go further on.
Do you know the names of the camps that you were taken to afterwards?
No, I got them somewhere in writing. I don't remember them just like that. I didn't stay long enough to get to know them. I should remember the names of them. They were on the way to further up north, you know, after Ravensbrück. On the way to the border of, I suppose we would have found ourselves in Poland or somewhere like that in the end.
Did they seem to be the same type of place?
Oh, yes, they were all the same type. The only difference, I suppose, was the size of them. But it was all the same kind of thing everywhere. I suppose you could say that Ravensbrück was one of the more active ones, if you like. Because Himmler came once and gave order that, you know, it wasn't working fast enough, killing people, so they built another crematorium. I suppose in that sense it was one of the largest. And also perhaps more equipped, I don't know.
You didn't see Himmler?
No, I never saw anybody but the camp commandant. We used to come and see you once a month. He would stand. I was punished. When our forces landed in the south of France, he came to see me in my cell. He said, you are being punished. And I said, oh. Yes. He said he could speak quite enough English, you know, to make conversation. He said, orders have come from Berlin, you are punished. And I said, why? He said, because you have been responsible for some information about something, you know, something to do with the Bachmann there. It was ridiculous.
Passing on information.
Yeah, passing on information. So, I mean, it was too ridiculous for words. So the punishment consisted of leaving me entirely in the dark. That was no daylight and no artificial light, and never seeing anybody coming into my cell, and having the central heating full on in August. So there I was left, and I spent 3 months and 11 days like that. He used to come once a month, the door would open, he'd stand in the doorway and say, have you anything to say? And I would say, no, I couldn't see, you know. No, the door would close again, and that was it. And we went on like that for 3 months, 11 days.
What condition were you in when you left Ravensbrück?
Like that. You see, I had a TB, started TB in captivity.